show.
Don't you always want to be the best you can be?
The Frankie Boyer Show.
What is this?
It's more than a lifestyle show.
It's a show about living in today's world.
I think something is happening.
Frankie enthusiastically brings an amazing eclectic mix to the airwaves.
You got that right.
One of the reasons she's earned legions of loyal fans is very simple. When you listen to the Frankie Boyer Show, you just never know what's going to happen next.
So listen for yourself.
Here is Frankie Boyer.
Welcome. It is so nice to have you with us right here on Biz Talk Radio. And I am getting ready for one of the biggest networking events that I do all year long. 90,000 people will be convening at Expo West. It's called Expo West in Anaheim, early March, for the very, very big natural product show. And so I see clients, I meet new people, and I come back with buckets and buckets of cards. And I always say, oh, I'll remember who this person is. But when you're talking to hundreds, if not thousands of people in a weekend, it's impossible unless you do something with them. And so joining us today is Dr. Ivan Meisner, ivanmeisner.com, one of the most successful business gurus that we have. He is the founder of BNI.com, which is the world's largest networking organization. He co-authored the new book, Who's in Your Room? The Secret to Creating Your Best Life. I need help, Ivan, and always wonderful to have you on.
Thanks for inviting me back. I'm starting to feel like a regular on the show. Thank you.
You are. So, Ivan, I do this every year, and then I go through the cards, and I try to make notes on the plane on the way back because it's West Coast, so I have hours to kind of do that. And I, for the life of me, I still have like about 25 to 40 cards, and I'm like, oh, God, where did I get this card from? And how it's total blank.
So here's one thing that I really recommend when people are at a large event or a multi-day event and they're getting a lot of business cards. But there's a massive caveat to the end of what I'm going to suggest to you. What I recommend is that you, when you get the card, ask the person, is it okay if I write a note on the back of your card? And then just jot a note down there about the conversation. Maybe, just a sentence about what it
was.
So that
yes. What booth I was at, where did I meet them? Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. Or what was the conversation about? Or what I like is talking to somebody and they express some kind of need and I say, hey, look, I can send you an article on that, or I can introduce you to somebody who can help you with that. Then I always make sure to write down on the back just a quick note so that in my follow-up, and follow-up is the key, in my follow-up, I make that introduction or I send that article or link. That's so important. So writing on the back of the card. Now, sometimes I'll do it as I walk away, but usually I do it while they're standing right there, and I'll just ask them if it's okay. Here's the massive caveat.
Right.
That's a big no-no in Asia. Never write on the back of a card or on a card in most Asian countries, Japan, Malaysia, Hong Kong, China. It is really an insult to write on their cards. Don't even ask, is it okay if I write?
Yeah. What do you do?
So what you do is, I recommend that you have a notepad, a small little notepad. And if you know you're going to be connecting with a lot of Asian business professionals, you start writing on the notepad. Because it's bad form. Plus, the whole business card ritual. Have you ever noticed, and you may have experienced it yourself, when an Asian business person holds the two corners of the card and they bow and hand you the card?
Yes.
Okay. That's called, in Japan, that's called the Maishi ritual. And it's the exchange of business cards. And you should learn how to do it in return. which Americans, you know, we practically toss a business card at somebody. It's business card is no big deal, but it's a big deal in countries like Japan. And so what they do is they hold the two tips of the corner facing you, and they hand it to you. You should take it from the two tips on the bottom, look at it, bow, thank them for the card, and if at all possible, comment on the card. A real easy comment for me generally is that most of the Asian business people that are doing business with Americans have a double-sided card. So it's in Japanese and it's in English. And so I'll usually comment, ah, I see you have English on the back side. That's very nice. Thank you. Or whatever. It's an attractive card. You comment on the card. That's the ritual, the Maishi ritual, which is very common in Asia. In America, you don't need to do that. But so it does vary a little bit. But I recommend you write on it. That's the way you remember.
Okay, perfect. Now, I was just at an event, a networking event, Ivan, where people didn't have business cards. We don't use them anymore. We're green. We're electronic. I was horrified.
Yeah. So I think that's a really bad idea. Really bad idea. I think that it's possible that we're straddling technology in that there will be a time where nobody has business cards and it's just an electronic bump of the mobile phones, but we're not there yet. We're absolutely not there yet. Now, you know, I've talked to millennials who say, yes, we are, and then I'll say, okay, well, how many in the room here can do that electronic bump where you just pass? And, you know, it's like 5% of the room. So we're not there yet.
Yeah.
In a big room, I mean, maybe if there are a lot of millennials, you might get 20% of the room. But when 80% of the room still doesn't have that technology or use that technology or understand that technology, then business cards, come on. It's the cheapest form of advertising on the planet. What the heck are you thinking if you don't carry business cards? It's just poor business.
Ivan,
let me get off my soapbox now.
Let me tell you my deal. I didn't have an opportunity to – I'm trying to figure out what I want to put on the new business card. I've had the same business card for years now, and I've not updated them. And I know I'm terrible. So I use my artwork.
That's a big deal. As long as you have good information on it. Yeah.
The information is still accurate, but I need to update and add some things. And I'm not clear of I really need two different cards, and I'm trying to sort it out in my head right now. So I have a bunch of old cards that I'm just going to barely make it through my expo. I know I am. Do I go to Staples and just say, you know, just make me 100 and call it a day and just take a basic old card that I have and just have 100 made? Or do you think it's okay to be stingy with my cards?
Well, it depends on the context. You know, I tend to be conservative in handing out my cards because everybody and their mother then starts contacting me. I always give a card when I'm asked, but I don't just hand them out. So I don't view it as stingy. I view it as selective. So I would say, yes, be selective with your cards. But I don't think it's a bad idea to run out. So when's your event?
It's early March. So I have time to
I'd have new ones.
All right, I will. You convinced me.
And put that information on there. That you think is missing.
Okay. I also, just so you know, it's the artwork. It's a real pain to have them printed, and it's, you know, and then what happens is people say, oh, I can't decide which one I want. Can I have this one and that one? And they take the card just for the artwork, and I'm just like, oh, gosh.
Have you thought about doing double-sided cards? I see that with some regularity.
That's what I'm doing. I'm doing a double-sided card. I do one side my artwork, and then the other side is my information.
Okay. So why would they want two cards?
Because my artwork is all different. I do
Got 40 different
scenes.
Well, that's a good problem. People are asking for your cards. There are good problems and bad problems. That's a good one.
Yeah, I guess that is. I want to become very focused for me this year. I want to focus on my cannabis show, which is just growing in leaps and bounds. And there's a hemp festival, hemp celebration, and cocktail parties. And I'm missing the hemp event on Tuesday. I'm not getting in town until Wednesday. And unfortunately, I had already booked everything, and it's impossible for me to change it at this late stage. So I'm missing out on an event on Tuesday, but I will make the best of it, and will have to work extra hard to reach all of those people. But my question to you is, how do we become more efficient if we do have a very specific goal in mind? And I'm going to let you address that when we come back. We're talking today to Dr. Ivan Meisner. Dr. Meisner has some great information, great business card etiquette, and believe it or not, it does exist. And we'll be back in just a moment. Ivan, what's the best website you want to give out?
Oh, IvanMeisner.com is my blog, and BNI.com is my company.
Okay, we'll be right back. Dr. Ivan Meisner is in the house. I'm Frankie Boyer. Stay tuned right here on Biz Talk Radio, BizTalkRadio.com, FrankieBoyer.com. Welcome back. It is Frankie Boyer. Dr. Ivan Meisner is with us today. Who's in Your Room is his new book, and we're going to talk about that in just a moment. But I asked you, this year I'm determined, Ivan, to get back to a place where I can check everybody before I go to Expo. I want to have the clarity and the organization, and so the expo list is already out, so I'm going to actually spend more time than usual going over the list, since I'm not going to make it on Tuesday to see who I should be talking to for the rest of the expo while I'm there. And I think that's a really good plan on my part, don't you?
It's a fantastic plan. I think all too often people go to networking events and they are just winging it. They show up at the front door and they work their way around the room, and they haven't done any preparation. Google is a thing of beauty. I love Google, because when I go to a networking event, if I know some of the people that are going to be there, I look them up. And nothing is more impressive than having a conversation with somebody and mentioning to them that you've either read something that they've written, or that you agree with some position that they have, or, you know, you start a dialogue from a perspective that you know a little bit about them.
Yeah, it's very powerful. Absolutely.
So, yeah, doing your homework in advance is brilliant.
Tell us how the general taught you business when you were starting your doctoral degree at USC.
The general, yeah. So obviously you've read one of my stories.
Yes.
Yeah, it'd be that kind of thing where I, you know, you point out a story that I've written. In this case, I tell a couple of stories about a general that taught me, but he taught me how to write tighter, shorter, and it's a great story. But that's the kind of thing that you want to bring up when you're talking to somebody, because you just surprised me there with you talking about that. And that's the impact that it has. People are like, oh, wow, this person, you know, they know a little bit about me.
Ivan, you've had such tremendous success. You're the master of networking. Let's face it, you are. BNI, the largest networking organization out there. The new book.
Very kind, thank you.
No, it's true, though. The new book, Who's in Your Room? The Secret to Creating Your Best Life. Give us a paragraph about this book and why.
Yeah, so it's really a self-help book, but it certainly works with the networking, because it's all about the people that you surround yourself. So the concept is, imagine you live your entire life in one room, and that one room has only one door, and that it's an enter-only door, so that when people come into your life, they're there forever. And people say, well, that can't be true. Well, it is kind of true, because their fingerprints are all over your brain. The experiences that you have with somebody, you will remember them for the rest of your life. And so the whole concept of the book is to learn how to screen out people more effectively from getting into your life or getting into your room if they are dissonant with you and your values, which means you got to get good with your values. If you don't understand your values, you can never create the life that you want to create. You can't curate your room effectively if you don't understand your values. So in a paragraph, that's the synopsis of the book, but we give a lot of really detailed step-by-step things that people can do to create their dream life.
You make such great sense, Ivan. I was stuck on a bridge. Terrifying experience last Sunday. And there was one young man who didn't speak very good English, but one young man that saw that I was stuck, pulled in front of my car and backed up on the bridge with people barreling up this. It's the on-ramp, and they're barreling, and it's three lanes.
Scary.
And it's very scary. But this young man, what can I do? How can I help you? I was there for 40 minutes, Ivan, until the state police came. And my heart was in my mouth, and he wanted to stay with me. Such a sweet guy. I said, no, I'll be fine. The police are on their way. But he popped my hood. He looked under the hood. One person in all that time, you talk about values. You talk about something that most people don't have.
Yeah, so that tells a lot about your values. What was important to you was an act of service, thinking of other people. So, I mean, just from that story, it not only talks about his values, but it talks about your values because that really resonated with you. That's, by the way, the kind of thing that you need to do to start thinking about your values, is think about experiences and who you were with, what happened, why it felt good. Once you start doing that, you can start understanding your values. Plus, in the book, we've got a download that you can download online to think about your values. But the stories, that, like you just described, that's really a powerful way to think about your values.
Yeah, absolutely.
Here's another thing, if we have time.
Yeah.
Because people have difficulty with their values. Deal breakers. People never have a problem with deal breakers. You know, they may glaze over if you say, give me a list of your seven values. But if you say, tell me what are some of your deal breakers in dealing with other people, man, they come right up with them right away. For me, when I was working on the book, I realized one of my deal breakers was drama. I just did not. People who are dripping in drama all the time.
Oh, God, we know those drama kings and queens, don't we?
Absolutely. So what's one of your deal breakers?
Oh God, I have too many, but authenticity, lack of authenticity.
So lack of authenticity. People who maybe whose egos enter the room before they do. You know that kind of thing. So those are deal breakers. Here's a deal breaker that my wife and I have together. We only go out with other couples. We only build a friendship with other couples who love and respect each other.
Oh, I love
and
that
we realized
one.
That sometimes we were out with couples who weren't respectful to each other or who weren't loving to each other. And now that's become a deal breaker for us in the kind of other couples that we create friendships with. So
I also have to say,
these are the things that you want to think of. And how does this fit with networking? Because in networking, these are people that are in your room. You have to have people that have values that are in alignment with yours.
I'm very generous, and therefore I need people that are also equally generous in their attitude and their affection for when I interact with people.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So if
so
you're
you
not
want,
generous,
you want to find people who have those kinds of values.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it doesn't have to be the same values, by the way. They just can't be dissonant.
Absolutely.
They can't be incongruent.
We could talk to you for a full hour. Maybe we will do that. We'll do a special hour with Dr. Ivan Meisner because he's just such great information. So go to ivanmeisner.com. And for the that's for the blog, and for the business, it's bni.com.
Yes, thank you, Frankie. Listen, I'm happy. Come on anytime. I love talking to you.
Oh, well, we love having you. The new book is out. Pick it up. It's called Who's in Your Room? The Secret to Creating Your Best Life. I'm Frankie Boyer. This is Biz Talk Radio. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. Welcome back. It is Frankie Boyer. This is Biz Talk Radio. Joining us now is digital literacy educator, advocate, mom, and CyberWise founder, Diana Graber. And she is the author of a brand new book. It's called Raising Humans in a Digital World, Helping Kids Build a Healthy Relationship with Technology. My first comment is, good luck with that. Diana, welcome. It's nice to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me. And I hear that comment a lot.
Yeah, I bet you do. I bet you do. So no matter how hard you say parents try to limit their child's screen time, kids encounter screens in schools, at their friends' house, and everywhere you go.
You know, you're absolutely right. It's really hard. And screens are everywhere. They're ubiquitous. They're not going away. But that doesn't mean that we don't have to help our kids learn how to live with them mindfully and wisely.
Okay. So you have created cyber civics programs for middle school students. And by the way, congratulations, because you were honored for your work with the 2017 Media Literacy Teacher Award from the National Association for Media Literacy Education. So it's a wonderful honor. So let's begin. At what age? Let me go way back. What age? Because I'm horrified seeing kids holding on to devices in a carriage.
I try to stay away from the word horrified, but I'm sort of there with you. And I really make an argument in the book that digital literacy starts from day one. Because I believe that today, now more than ever, kids really need great social and behavioral skills in order to be great digital citizens. And the reason for that is, you know, when kids go online when they're older, you know, they're dealing with faceless others. They can't see emotions. They don't know when they're hurting somebody's feelings because they can't see how someone reacts.
Yeah.
So it's when our kids are little that they need to start developing really good empathy skills and understanding and thoughtfulness. And you really do that away from a screen by looking at people's faces and understanding what a smile or a frown means. And you can't do that when a small child is gazing at a screen. They're missing opportunities to develop those super important human qualities.
Right. And I love some of the suggestions that you give out is saying empowering kids to set their own limits with technology, be a role model, practice unplugging together when walking the dog and sharing a meal. And I have to tell you that I was actually going by a restaurant the other night, and there was a gentleman, the window, you could see into the restaurant, and the gentleman was sitting there, and there were three other people with him, and he was actually on his phone, like checking something on his phone, and they're all in conversation, and he's like checking his phone, and I'm thinking, gosh, is that where we've come, that on a Saturday night you're checking your phone, you're with other people, and the phone is like still there?
Right. And, you know, I hear so many times parents and adults complaining that young people are always on their phones. But when you think about it, you know, from a time a child is young and they look around the world and they see how adults act, what they see are adults compulsively grabbing their phones, checking their phones when they're with other people, exactly as you say. And, you know, kids learn their adult habits from watching the adults around them. So, you know, who's surprised that when they reach teenage, you know, they become teenagers, they're on their phones all the time. I mean, we are too, and the research bears that out. Current research shows that the adults spend as much time per day on their phones as teenagers do. So, you know, we're all in this boat together.
Diana, how do you encourage, I mean, I can't even imagine, I cannot fathom what it's like today with social media, the pressures of being a kid.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of pressures, and really that's why we designed Cyber Civics, which is our middle school program, because we want kids to have a place in school to talk about these pressures, but more importantly to talk about the impact of what they do in social media, because everything a child does online stays online forever and becomes part of their digital reputation. So these are really important things for a child to understand, because as they get older and start applying for jobs and college, you know, people will Google them, and the silly and ridiculous and maybe, you know, inappropriate things they did as children are going to pop up to haunt them later. So, you know, this is something that I argue schools kind of owe it to children to spend a little bit of time during the day to address these really important issues.
Yeah, I think so. So how old are we talking about giving kids? I mean, well, they're growing up with it. It's not even, there is no age, I guess.
Right.
Same question.
And, yeah, you know, that's why in the book, what I recommend to families is to use something that I call digital on-ramps. And what that means is at every age and stage, on-ramp your children appropriately to using technology. And let me give you an example. You know, when they're very young, obviously they're going to see phones. And so maybe put them on your lap and show them how you use the computer to Skype with grandma or use your phone to FaceTime with dad when he's away on a trip. You know, little things like that do two things. They show kids that you're there to help them when they're trying to figure out technology. And number two, it's a way to use it mindfully and to connect with people rather than to disconnect us from one another.
You know, this actually is such critical stuff that you're talking about, Diana, because this catfishing, there's so many opportunities for all of us to be scammed in this world, and teaching kids to be savvy and to understand the power of the technology is so critical.
Right. I mean, you brought up a great point there because there's so many parts to digital literacy. You know, just in this small conversation, we've talked about screen time, we've talked about digital reputation. Now you've brought up privacy and being savvy. I mean, you know, this is not one conversation with a child. It's a conversation again and again and again to point out all these different aspects of your life online and what can happen and what you need to be aware of. You know, catfishing, cyberbullying, sexting, you know, your personal information being taken and hacked. I mean, these are all important conversation topics.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So technology, you say, is just a tool. Tell us what you mean by that.
Well, you know, when a child picks up a phone, think about that. It's basically a tool, like a hammer. A hammer can be used to make a beautiful structure. A hammer can be used to hurt, right? And a tool, the computer or the cell phone is the same thing. You know, it can be picked up and used as a tool to cyberbully somebody, or it can be used as a tool to compose a beautiful email that's going to touch someone's heart. So what we want to do is teach our children to use the tool well and wisely and nicely. The tools aren't going away, but how we use them, you know, is what's important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You say equip kids with the critical thinking skills they need in a digital world.
Yeah. Now that's a big one, because when you think about critical thinking, that's something that doesn't come in the child out of the womb. That's something that takes a bit for a child to be able to do. Critical thinking, they say, takes about 12 or 13 years to develop. Critical thinking requires abstract thinking, and a child is incapable of doing that until they're about 12 or 13 years of age. And so what I always tell parents is, you know, when you put a child online alone with a device, there's a lot of ethical thinking happening, or that should be happening, you know, like, do I respond meanly to a text? Do I post a picture that's going to hurt somebody's feelings? And so really, a child is incapable of making those smart decisions well before ages 12 or 13.
So how do you, as a parent, monitor the digital world? Or do you, Diana?
Well, I think you have to, especially when your children are young. And so I give parents some ideas on how to do that in my book. But, you know, really the most important thing is to be their mentor from the very beginning. And so they feel comfortable coming to you when there's something they don't understand or they have a question about. And, you know, as children get older, obviously you're going to give them a lot more freedom online, just like you do in real life. But you want your children to know that you're always there if there's something that goes wrong or if something that confuses them.
I think that when you're talking about, you know, years ago, we had shows like Sesame Street. Are they handling any of this digital literacy stuff, or any of the kids shows now? I'm just curious.
Well, You know, that's a good question, because there are some wonderful shows out there in the vein of what you brought up and the Mr. Rogers-like programming, and I think it's important for parents to find those quality shows. That's why I really encourage parents to co-view with their children when they're young to make sure that what they're taking in is,
yeah,
is nice, hey, and mindful.
This has been wonderful, Diana Graber. Your new book is out. It's called Raising Humans in a Digital World, Helping Kids Build a Healthy Relationship with Technology. And what's the best website?
Probably the book website, www.raisinghumansinadigitalworld.com.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And we'll be back in just a moment. Frankie Boyer, stay tuned, BizTalk Radio. And welcome back. It is Frankie Boyer. Boy, my next guest, it's true, her website is patriciarustcreative.com, and that's exactly what she is, one of the most creative people, and it's Dr. Patricia Rust. Writer, producer, entertainment coach, fine artist, a model, public speaker, and her philosophy is to create work that embrace the human spirit and contribute to the betterment of mankind, providing there's a chocolate reward. I just love that. Patricia, welcome. It is so nice to have you with us today.
Oh, thank you, Frankie. I'm such a huge fan. I love your voice. I love the way you modulate.
So
you bring out
kind.
Your guests. And I love every show you've ever done. You have the best guests, and I'm so honored to be with you today.
Oh, well, we love having you. So, out of all the hats that you wear, what's one of your favorite? Is it the writing? Is it the producing? Tell us.
It's the writing. I started writing children's books for the neighbors when I was 5 years old. And I would write little tales about, here's your grandpa when he came to visit you, and here's why he loves you, and that little cane that goes tappity-tap, he was doing in Morse code that he loved you. And I was entertaining, and I was such an outgoing child. I would dance and I would sing. And, you know, I think that our higher power, whatever we believe that to be, imbues us all with certain talents. Heaven knows I can't balance a checkbook or do my taxes, but I was given a lot of talent. And in that creative sense that you were talking about, but in my heart of hearts, I want to bring out the hero in everyone. So if I can awaken the talent in everyone, child or adult, I can do that with my words. I think that's the ability that I was given.
Yeah. I love that you do this. I love that. And you've also been writing for so long. And
yes.
You also have done some screenplays as well.
Yes, I'm very, very lucky and blessed because, you know, if you say you're a writer, it's like saying I'm a dentist. But then you say I've won an Emmy in comedy writing and suddenly, oh, tell me, make me laugh, you know, be funny. And I've written for a lot of sitcoms, you know, I'm very lucky. And I sold my first screenplay to Warner Brothers. I mean, no one does that. Everyone says, I'm going to write a screenplay. And I sold the first one to Warner Brothers. They put me under contract. I've been under contract to Disney, developing and writing for them, which is great because the artist in me, you know, I love color. And then my first children's book, The King of Skiddly-Doo, is still sold out on Amazon. And that's what prompted me to start a children's literacy organization and read to over 100,000 kids across the country. And then, you know, whether or not that becomes a television show, I've been offered so many times. But Jim Henson told me, don't give up your characters, Patricia. Hold them tight. They're your babies. And I can use them as teaching tools. And it's never about the money for me. It's always about the message. And I think that's why I wrote this latest book with this crazy title, Step Away from the Phone.
Well, it's so funny because we just had a digital literacy expert on. So this is so perfect. This is so perfect. We need to get kids to get back out and playing, don't we?
Oh my gosh, honey, it's unbelievable. You know, I see little kids with pot bellies. They're 8 years old. I'm like, what happened? Now, I understand there's safety concerns. I understand it's not easy to be a parent or teacher, but I'm right there holding the hands of the parents and the teachers. So when we were talking about heroes a minute ago, I understand how seductive the cell phone is. It's bright, it's glitzy, it's gorgeous. So I have the most beautiful, colorful artwork by my artist. And I take no credit, Aiden Kufing. He's from Thailand, or grew up there. He's an American now. But like on the hero page, you see all these kids in their capes, and they're flying through the clouds. And we have a vocabulary word on each page, and it says hero. I'm chasing the clouds. Lots of friends are coming too. I'm wearing a hero cape, and I have one for you. So instantly the kids imagine themselves as a hero. Like, Frankie, what would you be a hero for doing?
Oh, my gosh, so many things. Are you kidding?
I know. That's what I mean. You just, you know, saved your friend who was dying. You were there every day. You were his guardian angel. You took him to the light. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that, right?
Right. Absolutely. No. Absolutely. But, you know, I think that we forget that we have a voice. And so I would encourage everyone to understand that they have a voice. They need to be heard. They need to be seen. You know, that we all are important, that we have to be seen and heard.
Yes. And the other point you make is most people think, oh, I can't do anything about that. That's just the issue. Let sleepy dogs lie. One person can make such a difference.
Absolutely.
I got involved. The King of Skiddly-Doo has a literacy theme. We'll have to tell your friend about your friend with a digital literacy. The King of Skiddly-Doo has a subversive message about learning is power, reading is power. You can succeed in life if you learn to read, but it's all done in rhyme and comedy, and the kids love it. They use it in prisons in their literacy programs. I get letters from prisoners saying, I never knew how to read. And I'm thinking, my God, I wrote it for 3 to 8 year olds. And it's transformative. But anyway, the point is, one person can make a difference. And I ended up going all the way to India to read to kids, and they showed it in prime time.
Oh, I love this, Patricia. Oh, Patricia, you're fabulous.
So
Patricia Rust, PatriciaRustCreative.com. Check out, and the books are all on Amazon, so just Google her and just get on the website and check out how gorgeous this woman is inside and out. What a pleasure. Thank you so much, Patricia, and thank all of you. This has been another edition of the Frankie Boyer Show for Biz Talk Radio. Thanks for listening. Make it a great day, and as always, smile.
Smile.